afternoon, everybody. I wanted to first acknowledge many people who are involved with planning this shiur and who planned the regular shiurim here. I think it's an amazing concept, and it's a real tribute to all of you, those who come and those who organize. Rabbi Kavalevitz and I go back many years. We were chavrusas in Beis Yosef in the Bardic, talking 30 years ago, and he's a unique Talmid Chacham, as you well know. He's extremely broad and a tremendous mensch at the same time. It's a real kavod that you have him here, and I'm sure you're making use of him. It's nice that he asked me to come, and I'm happy to share some Divrei Torah with you. I was asked to announce and acknowledge the sponsors for this week, Mr. and Mrs. Mordechai Knecht, in honor of the engagement of their grandson, Yehoshua Gadisman Tachavi Feder. So it's Shvizochet to Buddha Bayis Neman v'Yisrael, Hashem v'Seferes, v'Sh'ol Go Mechai L'Choyel. Okay, so the topic of the shiur is the notion called piyut. Piyut is a form of tefillah, as we know, but it's not typical tefillah. It's different than normal tefillah that we're used to. And when it comes to Yom Noraim, piyut features very prominently, as we know, in our davening. And it would be helpful to get an appreciation of what piyut is, to get our bearings, so when we dive in Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, we can appreciate what we're doing. Truthfully, this topic could go well beyond one shiur. It really requires, you know, a semester, if you will, of shiurim. But we'll try to get at least acquainted with some of the basic aspects of piyut, some of the makoros that you'll have here on your sheets. You can either use the sheets in front of you, or we can use what we have in the projector. So we'll try to follow the format that you have on the first page, which is sort of like an orientation. And as much as we can, we'll look at some of the chorus inside, and whatever we don't get to, you're free to take the packets with you and make use of them and learn through them as you wish. Okay, so the first thing is to point out there's tefillah and there's piyut. You see, tefillah is standard prayer. What we're used to, regular structure of Shemoneh Esrei and the brachas of Kriya Shema and so on. And we say that regularly, pretty much, you know, whether it's Shabbos or it's weekday, whatever it may be. Piyut gets embedded within tefillah, and it's different. And the question is, what's the reason for piyut? How far back does it go? What's its purpose? So there are really two ideas to share with you. The first one I entitled here, Baruch Hashem Yom Yom, which is a pasuk that the Gemara quotes to learn out that you're supposed to mention, let's say, Me'ein HaMa'ora when you daven. Let's say on Rosh Chodesh, you mentioned Yalav Yavo. The more specific you can be to relate to the time of the year that you're at, and also in terms of brachos, the more specific you can be to talk about not just general Shevach Hashem, but specifically what it is that you want to acknowledge Hashem for, it's a greater Shevach and tribute to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Piyut comes to accomplish that, because if you're davening and you're saying a standard Nusach, so then it's a generic Nusach. But when you have a special occasion, whether it's a Yontif or a Shabbos, and you can expand on the Nusach that's generally said to speak to the occasion, then it raises the tefillah to another level, and it makes it more spontaneous and more relevant and hopefully more exciting. Now, that's not always the case because of the nature of piyut and the barriers that we have to the language of piyut, as we'll soon get to. But that's the idea. Often, it's the Shliach Tzibur that's the one that's supposed to do it for you, and not necessarily for the Tzibur to say every part of the piyut, maybe a refrain or two along the way. The Shliach Tzibur is one that's leading the tefillah and inspiring the Tzibur, and that's where you can improvise in the form of piyut. So that's one idea within piyut. As we said, Baruch Hashem Yom Yom. The other idea is mentioned by Sefer Ha'itim, one of the Rishonim, and that has to do with the notion of shmad. We know that there were periods in our history that Klal Yisrael were not able to learn Torah, and the opportunity, whenever you could find it, to teach people to understand things and halachos was not as easy, and they somehow found a way to tuck it into tefillah. So that's why you'll find some piyutim that actually go through halachos. One famous one is on Shabbos HaGadol, where you have literally going through from Bedikas Chametz all the way through the Seder. It's of Yosef Tov Elam, one of the Kapaitanim from the earlier Rishonim, that composed that, and suddenly you're learning Mesechta Pesachim. what's exactly the connection between Torah and Tefillah. So according to Sefer Itim, it's because of the fact that people didn't have an opportunity to learn, and therefore they would be able to learn via piyut. Now piyut goes...
Why is it so poetic? Okay, so hard.
So we'll see. We'll see that. We're going to get to some aspects of piyut in just a minute. Just to, before we go on to the next section, which is really what you're getting to, Tzuras HaPiyut, and the nature and the linguistics of it, piyut goes back a very long time. We think, you know, Rishonim, maybe Gaonim, it's before that. We'll soon see where Blazar HaKalir, according to some of the Rishonim, was a Tana. Whether he was or wasn't a Tana, there are references in Midrashim of Chazal to Paitonim. So even the word piyut itself...
What's a little definition of piyut?
Okay, so if Davi Magash connects it to a Greek word, which we would be familiar with, which is poetry, right? So in other words, it's the idea of improvising. It's a difference between prose and poetry. It sometimes has a different meter and a different rhythm. And this is, again, if you look at, I'll go ahead now to the next page, you'll see a medrash or two that mentions the idea of a piyut, talks about individuals who are paitanim. The first source on your sheet, number one, it's numbered here. Kadamach Rabbelezer Rav Shimon, when he died, Rabbelezer Rav Shimon died. Hayudor Korelav. They quoted a pasuk on him. Mizos Omen Amidbar. Nekoaf Kas Rochel. From all of the specimens of a peddler, and just like a peddler has all kinds of different wares, so was Rabbelezer Rav Shimon, multifaceted person. Kari Vetanui Ukiruve Upaitui. So one of the things that he's described as is being a paitan. A next source following this, Haden Paitana, an ordinary poet, you might say, Kad Ovid Alphabesa, when he goes through the alphabet, he's going to use an acrostic, that's another one of the aspects of piyut. So Zimnin Machasila, Zimnin Dules Machasila. He might finish it, like Chasal through the Pesach, he might get to the end, he might not get to the end, because not so easy to go through all alphabet. But Shlomo HaMelech, he wrote Alphabesa, V'chamsha asan yaseirin. He wrote the whole alabase plus an additional five lines afterwards, like we find in some paitanim where they put their names, right, in acrostic after the piyut is finished. The Rimagash in source number three, as we just mentioned a minute ago, bir milas piyut, milashin shira, milashin yivani, shikorin l'mishor paitana. And so this is the notion of piyut going back certainly to the time of the Tanoim. Now there are different names that are used when you refer to piyutim. So we're using the generic term piyutim, but if you look in the Rishonim, you notice the Abudram already mentions one of them called krovos. You've heard the term krovos, and why is that a word to refer to piyut? So the Abudram has a few suggestions. He says, number one, in source number four, the Shliach Tzibor is like the Kohen Gadol, who's makriv karbanos on behalf of Kal Yisrael, and therefore he is coming close. He's coming to enter into, you might say, the Kodesh HaKadoshim equivalent when he goes to the Amud. And then
that vernacular is pretty much lost today. Everybody calls them just plain
Yotzer. Yes, well, Yotzer, correct. Now, Yotzer is a different term that's specific. If you go back to the Yotzer, right, to the Yotzer or Bracha, and there's another term called Zulas, because they used to have, you look in Machzorim, we don't typically say this today, but there are many piyutim that are inserted after the words Ein Elokim Zulasecha, before you start Ezra Sabesenu, which is in the Bracha of Gal Yisrael, and that's called a Zulas. And you have other terms such as Kedush Tos, which is leading to Kedusha, that means basically starting with, you know, they're actually called, some of them are called Magain, which is in first Bracha, and Machaye, and then the Kedush Tos leading to Kedusha. That's another term. There's another term called Rishus. Like you'd find even when you call someone up, let's say, Simchas Torah Mirishus, da-da-da-da-da. So there are Rishuyos in the piyut, and the typical one is Misot Chacham Nevonim. When the Chazan begins his Chazaras HaShatz, and he gets to a certain point, when he gets to the Ahava, before he's concluding the first Bracha Melch Ozer, suddenly, Misot Chacham Nevonim, what is he saying? After Chapi, I'm going to add to the typical tefillah. I'm asking permission to be able to do that. Which is interesting, because if you say Misot Chacham and Nevonim and you don't have piyut, you've did the purpose. What some people do, and sometimes in a mincha, for example, be it Rosh Hashanah, be it Yom Kippur, so they'll have the paragraph Misot Chacham and Nevonim said by the Chazan, and then they'll skip the piyut that follows, and they'll go Melch Ozer. But you haven't, that's undermining the whole point. The point is you want to allow yourself to continue. other Rishiyos, for example, before you get to Malchios, you have Ochilo Lokel, a series of psukim. That's a Hagdama, meaning a Rishus, to begin the section of Malchios. Also, Heye and Pefios, that's a Tefillah of Yom Nerai.
If you ask Rishus also, right?
Hey, Nihani Mimas is like is an example of that, yes.
So you ask him Rishus beforehand and...
Yeah, because he's gonna be the Chazan for the rest of Musa. So it's a form of Rishuyos. Not exactly the same as when he's doing a Chazar Sashatz.
That's only if you do it during Chazar Sashatz. Nowadays,
the truth is, Hen Yani Mimas, you could probably get away with even if you don't add piyut afterwards, because you are the Shiach Tzibur. One way or another, you're going to be saying the Chazar Sashatz. But there are specific Rishuyos that are meant to justify saying piyutin, such as we mentioned before, the Misot, Chacham Nevonim, and as few of the others, Achil Okeh, and so on.
Hindi
is before. He's getting started as a chazan. Right, they're interrupting. Right, and we'll see the issue of hefsik in a minute. The Abu Dram has another pshat for the term krovos, and that's because it's inserted within the davening. And this is, again, we're talking about in the Shmona Esrei, in the Chazar Sashatz. There are those who think, the Beis Yosef quotes this, I believe it should be here as well, if we go down a little bit. Go in source number 5 on your first page. The term krovets, you see sometimes in Purim, in the Siddurim, they're called krovets. And krovets is actually another way to refer to these piyutim. And why krovets, says the Beis Yosef? Because Rashi Tevos, ko rina vishua bali tzadikim. It's an expression of joy, of adding to the tefillah by putting a dimension of simcha into it. It's interesting because there's one of the Rishonim, the Maril, who is famous for Minhagim, so he brings that on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, so he says, we don't say Zulas Krovets. You notice, typically you'll find in Shalosh Regal and Machzorim that have Piyut, will have Piyut in the Brach of Gal Yisrael, but not Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. So the Maril and those of his school make the comment, one of the reasons that they say we don't have a Piyut of Zulas is because it's not a time of Simcha. We know Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur is more serious, and therefore, the piyutim of Zulas were not said, and his language there is, we don't say krovets, because what's krovets? Ko rina bishua bo tzadikim. You don't want to get too excited with simcha, piyutim. Why is that associated with simcha? Perhaps because you're talking about Kriyas Yamsuf and the miracle, and the going out and breaking out in song. So the piyutim of Zulas have a certain joy associated with it, and Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur would be not, has to be tempered, therefore we don't associate those piyutim of krovets, which is zulas, in the tefillah of Yom Nerayim. Okay, so we have various terms, as we noted, krovos, yotzros, technically, you know, they should be connected to those particular parts of the davening. What are some of the aspects, the literary aspects of piyut? Again, so a couple of things to be familiar with. Tanakh. Now, we don't know Eo, we don't know Mishle, right? We don't know Shir Hashirim so much either. I mean, but anyone who knows Tanakh, so you already have you're a step ahead, because when you have Psukim at your fingertips and then you see a form of that Pasuk appearing in the Piyut, you know where it's coming from. Not just Tanakh, it's Midrashim of all kinds, whether it's Psikta Rav Kana, whether it's Medrash Rabbah, whether it's Pirkei Rabbi Lezer. And there's also Hecholos literature, which is a whole other literature that's more mystic in nature. And a lot of that, Rav Elazar Kalir, we'll soon see one of the Paitanim, he drew a lot of that as well. So the more that you get comfortable with Psukim and Chazal, the more that you can understand where the Paitanim are drawing from. There's also an interesting thing that we'll soon see is somewhat controversial, but a concept in Piyut is the words themselves, the language gets stretched. It's not straightforward type of language. It's not typical tefillah. It's words that are sometimes invented by, you might call, poetic license, which is typical of poets. And it makes it that much more difficult. You have acrostics, of course, whether it's alabes, whether it's reverse alabes, and then oftentimes the name of the composer will appear after the piyut is over, so you'll have his name, plus perhaps a chazak, or yechi chazak, chazak ve'emotz, and so on. That's also common to piyut. We should recognize that there's all kinds of piyutim. Some are harder than others. Even standard tefillah has become defined in some ways by piyut. We don't always realize the difference. Think about regular tefillah of Shabbos. So in Shachris, the bracha of Kedushas Hayom starts with Yismach Moshe Matnas Chelko. There's a piyut quality to that. It's easy piyut, but it's really piyut. Take Musaf of Shabbos, Tikanta Shabbos, Ratzisa Karvenu Seha. It's a piyut. In Rishonim, refer to Tikanta Shabbos as a piyut. It's a reverse acrostic of Tashrak, right? Tikanta Shabbos going backwards. And it has a rhyme to it. So here you have Kel Adon is a form of a piyut. And it just became now, you know, integrated within the tefillah, embedded within the tefillah. Sometimes it's not as natural a fit, but really it's ubiquitous. It's in tefillah so much. Now there's a quality that we're going to have to discuss more at length as we go on this year, but I'll mention it now already. The way that piyut is recited. So there's a certain give and take between the kahal, the tzibur, and the chazan. Now that's an interesting phenomenon. In other words, the chazan says something, and then there's a response, and then the chazan goes his part, and then there's a response. But that has led to... Like, say, take Keladin, for example. Keladin was meant to be responsive, you know, either alternating stanzas or repeating the stanza, but then the next one, like a pismo. And yet, in many shows, it's just sung together beginning to end. Even Anim Zmiros, you know, I was ochet to write a sefer recently on Anim Zmiros for my son's bar mitzvah, so it came out not too long ago, just about a year ago. And one of the things I mentioned in the sefer was this quality of back and forth. And we know one stanza being the chazan stanza, and then the response. I've heard since then that there are shuls, I'm not familiar with these shuls, but they exist, where literally everybody together from the first stanza on its mirrors until Miyamalel, it's like one big song, you know, one big kumzitz. I mean, that's clearly not what was intended.
Even in Kedusha, we've messed it up.
Okay, so this what's happened is it's worse than what you even realize. Why? Okay, and I'd like to get to this soon, but... If you notice where we're pausing, take some of the piyut, and let's start with one that, you know, in the beginning of the Chazaras HaShatz, Ata Elokeinu Bashamayim Va'oretz Gibor V'Naretz. It's an Aleph Beis. What's happening is, Ata Elokeinu Bashamayim Va'oretz Gibor V'Naretz, Dogu Mervava Husach Vayehi. It doesn't really fit. Really, think about the words. Husach Vayehi. He spoke and things existed, came into existence. V'tziva V'nivro. The hey and the vav are meant to be strung together. B'tziva v'nivro goes with husach v'yehi. Instead, what are we doing? We're separating it. B'tziva no v'tzach is zichro l'netzach. Zichro l'netzach is meant to go with chayolamim, because the same idea. Zichro l'netzach, chayolamim. Notice, we've messed up the pause, and it's not just here. It's many of the pesukim where we're basically ending one stanza, going to next stanza, instead of connecting them, and we don't realize ourselves how we've undermined the kavana of the composer. Whether it's b'chol maminim, whether it's in other things like that. Now, in defense of what's happened, and again, we'll come back to this, but Salvechik noted the following. How did this happen? Because there's a give and take, there's a chazan and the tzibur, so the interface between chazan and tzibur led, at a certain point, for the tzibur to chaperain the next line to prompt the chazan to say his line. So they said it before him, and then the chazan prompts the tzibur, and so it became a big chont, and now it became said the way it's said. But why is that important, says of salvation? Because one of the qualities of Davash HaKedusha, one of the characteristics of Davash HaKedusha, we know with Kedusha itself, is what the Pasuk says in Yeshay, V'kara Zel Zeve Amar. One calls to the other, one mouth to the other, prompting. What we're doing with the chazan is creating that effect of each one trying to prompt the other one. Kadosh, kadosh, umasam, baruch yameiru, say baruch, like ve'imru amen, baruch, kvar Hashem imkomo. That's what kadosh is also, prompting, one the other, and the give and take has led to the point where he sort of took over the next line to prompt the chazan, the chazan, the kahal, and back and forth. So that's actually part of what's meant to happen to create the effect of Davash HaKedusha. Now, again, it does take away sometimes the understanding of what you're saying, but it really is meant to preserve that idea of Davash HaKedusha. Okay, so this is some of what we have in terms of the general observations about piyut. Some of the paitanim we should mention, now in the third section a little bit here, his pashtusu shel piyut, how widespread it was, and who are some of the individuals that are famous for writing piyutim that have made their impact and left their imprint on our davening. So one of the famous ones is Yanai. Yanai lived in the 6th century. This is like after the Gemara, before the Gaonim. And he wrote many, many piyutim. He was prolific. I'll give you one famous one of his. and that is Vahi Bachatzi HaLaila, which we say at the end of the Seder, and you'll find it also for Shabbos Agado in some of the Sidurim. So really, he was intending to write piyutim that connected to the reading, the Torah reading of that week. Now, the Torah reading for us is finished in 1 year, but in Eretz Yisrael was a triennial cycle. So that means that a triennial took 3 years till you had Simchas Torah. So that means that Parshas Bo wouldn't be our Parshas Bo. It would be, let's say, a section of Parshas Bo, beginning perhaps with Vahi Bachatzi HaLaila. And that became the Kriyas HaTorah of that Shabbos. They wrote, Yanai wrote piyutim that corresponded to the Kriyas HaTorah of the day. In his day, in Eretz Yisrael, which he lived, the Sidra, as they call it, was starting with Vahi Bachatzi HaLaila. So he wrote for that Parsha, quote unquote, that Sidra, his composition. He wrote so many more, because take 52 or something by 3, 150 something, piyutim, because he wanted the piyutim to reflect the Kriyas HaTorah.
What's the story behind that?
That's a separate shir. In other words, why? Right. Eric just said how it changed that now everyone adopted the one year. They did Simchas Torah every 3 years. That's how it was in Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara refers to it. In Eretz Yisrael,
they didn't have a chag.
They had Shmiat Seres, yeah. But Shmiat Seres did not become Shmiat Seres did not become the occasion to celebrate the completion of the Torah. That took place whenever it took place, and it could have been any time. And then once we went with the 1 year cycle, then they merged it with Shmini Atzeres.
So this fundraising plan for shuls in Chasam Torah, Chasam
Brachos. Yeah, okay. It could be a lot of agendas, you know. Another very very famous of the Paitanim is Elazar HaKalir. Now Elazar HaKalir is mamish everywhere. You name it, he's there. Think about Kinnis Tisha B'Av. Think about Hoshanis. Think about Tfilas Geshem, Tfilas Tal. Rosh Hashanah, the first day, not the second day. Tosis will point out that he did not compose for the second day, possibly because they had 1 day Rosh Hashanah in his time, and many of the Yamim. Zmira is not that I'm aware of, but piyutim and davening everywhere, and he was obviously influenced depending on when he lived. There is a comment of Tosis in Chagiga. Another is shown him also. In theory, agree that he lived in that same period. Tosis in Chagiga, go to your sheets for a second, you'll see. Tosis in Chagiga says, source number 11, that the author of Elazar HaKalir was none other than Rav Elazar b'Rav Shimon, the son of Shimon ben Yochai. Shitas Tosis Chagiga daf Yud Gimel. And he's relying on the lashon of the Medrash that we noted before, that when Rav Shimon died, they were maspid him. One of the things they said about him, he was a paitan. So Tosfos assumes it was, in fact, Rav Elazar HaKalir. The Rashba thinks it was a different Tana. He says Rav Elazar ben Arach. I'm talking about Tanayim. Now, there are those who are not as convinced of this, even within our own school of, you know, of Achronim, Yosef, you see in verse 13, maybe he was later, maybe he was closer to the Gaonim times. What many have come to think that he is, based on a lot of research, is that he lived in the 7th century, and that means the early 7th century, right? So it was after Yanai, and he would have been perhaps in some way Talmud, in some way of Piyut of Yanai. Whether the result comes is that he was a nitzutz of these Tanayim, so okay, he wasn't maybe a Tana, but he embodied the spirit of that Tana, so maybe we can perhaps accommodate what Tosis is saying. There's a lot of discussion, there's a lot of pushback. Those who think it wasn't the Tana say, how could you say that? Tosis says he is. If you look at another Yehuda, source 14, he says it could be, he was a Tana. The Gemara doesn't mention him, but he was a Tana. So we're not going to get into that polemic exactly. Was he a Tana? Was he not? Was he a spark of the Tana? Was he a Gilgul of the Tana? One thing is clear, he was a Kadosh. And this, it's written about him, you can see in source 15, Shibali HaLeket says, and others quote this as well, when he was composing a piyut from Bahachayos HaShehenam Rubos, which is in the Yotzer Bracha, so literally the Malachim were coming down. So he was a Kadosh Elyon, Rav Elazar HaKalir. And even his name is a whole discussion where HaKalir comes from. There's all kinds of legends and connections to that. We won't get into it. But he left an incredible imprint on Piyut. Now, with this came opposition. Now, when you take Rav Elazar HaKalir, it's not a simple thing, because he became so accepted, and the Rishonim held him in tremendous regard. Rashi in Chumash quotes him, we'll mention soon. Rashi in Dibrei HaYamim quotes him. Tosis quotes him several times. His piyutim, that is, quotes his piyutim. It was very much accepted for the Rishonim, the Blessed Kaliyas Piyutim, they were all familiar with it. However, it comes along the Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra, you know, was no holds barred. He didn't agree with something, he wouldn't mince words. He was a purist. He was very into, you know, how should words be written, how should tefillah be written. And he was very opposed to this whole notion of the genre called piyut, especially what Rav Elazar Kalir did to piyut. He says, piyut of Rav Sadia Gaon, I have no problem with. It's straightforward. I understand it. It's enhancing the tefillah. Comes Rav Elazar Kalir with his piyut and think about kinas of Tisha B'Av. How easy is it to understand some of those kinas? Mamish difficult. You need a pirish on a pirish on a pirish to get to anything to understand. And it takes years of effort and training and sensitivity. So he had a number of objections. If you go to your sheets or to the screen, as it will, go to source number 23, okay? Number 23. I want to show you a couple of lines in Ibn Ezra on Koheles. So the Ibn Ezra has what he calls four objections to piyut. See it? Klal Omer, he says, Yesh arba dvarim kashim. Number one, he says, Kirube piyut av chidos umishalim. You can't understand what he's saying. It's unclear. It's convoluted. Go with Shlomo HaMelech. Go with Chana. Look what tefillah is supposed to be. It's supposed to be clear cut. Second issue, Hadavar Hasheni. Next paragraph, right? So that's 23. He says, Shepiyuta mu'vaviyim b'lashon Talmud. You're mixing in Lashon HaKodesh with Aramaic, and it's not even coming from Lashon HaKodesh. Why mix and match? Keep it simple, keep it consistent. Number three, Hadavar HaShlishi, even what's in Lashon HaKodesh, he's confusing the laws of Dikduk. He's not doing things right. He's confusing Zachar and Akev, and he gives examples to this. And finally, he says, on the next page, the fourth issue, I mean, before he gets to it, he says, "I Rachman Alibabai, yeah, you know, Hashem just wants the heart. So, no? Then why is it important to speak clearly anyway? Why do we have a composition called Hayein Pefios? Al Yikashlo Bilshonam. Say what you want, let it come out as it wills. It's all about the heart, right? Very cynical. The fourth point, Shekol Piyuta Mileim Midrashos Vagados, and we know Emik Rasidip Shuto. Okay, you can read through, there's a lot here. This aroused a lot of, controversy, especially in the time of the Achronim, when the Haskalah movement began to grow. Time of Kibbe Eger, the 18th century, where a lot of the Maskilim began to say, you know what, let's drop Piyut. Let's drop Piyut, you know, that's how it starts, right? Then you get to other things. And there was a lot of literature that was coming to defend Piyut, and they were quoting Ibn Ezra, the Maskilim, of course, Ibn Ezra, they were into Lashon HaKodesh in its purest way. So I want to read you, it's not in your packet, a letter of Rabbi Kibbe Eger to a community called Eisenach. And this is printed in the Michtavir Rabbi Kibbe Eger, which I happen to have. And in the middle of this letter, he's talking about the importance of preserving tefillah as it's supposed to be and not what the reform movement is beginning to think about, the maskilim. In the middle of this letter, he writes to this kihila, V'chen b'piyutim, Ein l'shanos hanusach shenostu mikdoshi elyom. Don't change the alter the language. Af shaharav ibn Ezra b'koheles b'pasek shmar raglecha loag u'por apiv. He threw a venom al ha-kalir kvoto b'mkom ha-munach u'bazeh asa shelo kahogen. He was not proper to do that. Let's go up b'kvot ha-kodosh hazeh she'idu olam b'tosis chagiga daf yud gimo in the rush shayetana b'vlesa b'av shimin u'chubas ha-rashba says was a ben arach v'chol dvarav miusadim al pi midrashos agados v'rozi ha-torah u'gdolei rabosenu rashi v'tosos samchu d'veim alav. And he quotes, for example, you can check this afterwards, Rashi Chumash, Bereshis Perek Lamed Pasuk Chavdei, Vayisko Kim Es Rachel. Rashi quotes that Esav wanted to marry Rachel, right, because he looked at her and he said, maybe I meant to marry her, and she got all nervous. V'hu sheyisid ha-payit, words of Rashi in Chumash. V'hu sheyisid ha-payit, b'yotzer l'Rosh Hashanah, says Rabbi Kibbe Eger, ha-maschu chug even. So I looked it up, it's actually even chug as we have it, but okay, basically the same piyut. It's found, if you look in part of the piyut that we skip typically, first day of Rosh Hashanah, after Mechai HaMesim, there's a continuation of the piyut that started in the first bracha, Magen Avraham, Evan Chug, and this is the line that Rashi quotes, Ha'admon. Now here you get an example of how the words are not clear. Ha'admon, who's the Admon? The Admon is Esav. Ha'admon, Kivat, Shalo Chala, when he saw that she did not give birth, chala is to give birth. You have to know the word but means to see, and you know, and chala means another word for having conceiving. Shelo chala tzava, he wanted. This week's parasha is lo yitzpe, to want, sabi is to want. Sava lakachtalo, he wanted to take her for himself, v'nisbahala, and she got all nervous. So Rashi quotes these words in his Perush al Torah on the Pasuk Yisko Kimis Noach. And Rav Vega says that Rashi Rambam quoted a different piyut of Hakalir, and Tosis quoted Hakalir, says the Rav Eger. And I can't even tell you how many times he's quoted. Hashem should forgive Ibn Ezra for what a mistake he made to take on Hakalir. Now, what about some of the issues in terms of substance? I mean, there are concerns. So what do we do in response? So there's a very lengthy essay of the Maharal Miprag. You can read it carefully yourself in source 24, because I want to get to some specific Yitim Rosh Hashanah in terms of, you know, the Yoma. But the Maharal Miprag also defends Hakalir and the Paitanim as a whole from the objections of the Ibn Ezra. In a nutshell, and you've seen source 24, a big selection of what he writes in Nesivas Olam, Nesiv HaAvoda, says the Maharal Miprag that you have to understand, piyut is another way of expressing emotions, feelings, ideas. There's standard lishonos of tefillah, which is straightforward, and then there's a certain mindset that you want to communicate through the words, and the words are meant to reflect emotions, and the emotions have their own rhyme and rhythm, and the words sound different. Take even within the Chumash, Az Yashir Moshe, take the words of Shiras Hayam. They don't sound anything like a typical pasuk, like you read in Parshas Kiseitse. That's strict laws. Kiseitse l'mecham aloi v'achal nesanu. But what Az Yibizimas Kava, the answer is because you're on a higher, you're trying to express your emotions. So you rise above standard language of prose. You get into the poetry mode. And okay, it's harder to follow, but so be it. That's part of the expression. So you take liberties with language. And this is the basic defense that the Maharal gives. It's harder for us. Okay, so try harder to understand where it's coming from. But this is part of the beauty of piyut. It shouldn't be looked down on, denigrated. It should be appreciated. Okay. There's another issue that's controversial about piyut, which, again, we don't have time to get into all the ins and outs of it, but we have to be familiar with it. And this is what comes up in Shulchan Aruch. Go back in your numbers here. Just go back a couple of sources. You see, there's a Mishnah in Brachas, in the first paragraph of Brachas, that says, Makom she'amru laharech en rashei lekatzer, Makom she'amru lekatzer en rashei laharech. And how do you understand the Mishnah? So there are those who show them who take that to mean you can't tamper with Nusach HaTefillah. It's a hefzik. So it's a bracha of Yod Seror. The bracha is meant to be Ketikun Chacham, Kemat Be'er Shetav HaChacham, from beginning to end. Basically. Okay, maybe you can have it, you know, Nusach here, slightly different. But suddenly adding a whole poem in the middle is improper. Right? Makom She'amru Katzim Shai Laharech. That's the bracha. That's what it's supposed to be. Now, if you interpret the Mishnah that way, then it's a problem called Hefzik. That's in terms of the bracha of Birchas Kriyas Shema. Similar issue could be relating to Shmoneh Esrei. You're not supposed to ask for personal things in the first three brachas, right? With a whole debate about how we can have Zachreinu L'chaim. But now you're going to have piyutim inserted in the brachas of Shmoneh Esrei? How could you do that? You have to preserve the Nusach HaTefillah. So then there are many Rishonim who have different interpretation of the Mishnah. They say it doesn't mean what we just said. Makom she'amru katzer en rashei laharech means that if a bracha is supposed to not end with a baruch, you don't make it end with a baruch. It's a bracha katzara. It's a bracha arukah that's supposed to start and end. You don't cut out the ending of the baruch at the end. Different interpretation. To the contrary, achas arukah, achas katzara, says the Mishnah, means you can improvise, you can add. What's important is the beginning and the end. Matbeah bracha has to do with how you end the bracha. So if you go with that approach, so you have, for example, Sadi Gaon's Siddur, Friday night davening, the bracha of Ma'ariv, Aravim, talks about Shabbos. His next sentence or two about Shabbos. Piyut. Not confusing piyut, but umaisa. You have a right to do it. So there's a big debate in Shulchan Aruch how this plays out. There's a Tshuvas HaRambam about it as well. The Rambam has the issue framed in terms of Osik, the mitzvah, part of the mitzvah, which is interesting, a different way to look at it. You're doing one thing, you shouldn't say piyutim. But the issue that plays out in Shulchan Aruch, the two in the Shulchan Aruch, source number 19, take a look, is Hefzik. So there are those who say it is a problem of hefzik, and therefore if the tzibur is doing it, don't say it with them. Let them say it. So apparently they couldn't stop people from doing it. It was very much mekubal to say piyut. So even those who were against piyut because of Hefsik, would still just do their own thing, but they wouldn't stop everybody else. But then there are those who defend Piyut, and you look in Shulchan Aruch, source 20, and Mishneh Berurah elaborates more in light of what we just said. Yesh Mekomos, says the Machaber, in Siman Semaches, Shemafsikin Bebirchas Kriya Shema Goman Piyutin. And this is what today Minhag Ashkenaz, pure Minhag Ashkenaz, the Yekis, will say, Goyers will say Piyutin, in, you know, in the bracha of Yod Zeror and Abba Rabba even, and Zulas. What?
And the Kozar Rosh Hashanah.
Now we, on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, we have made something of a compromise. We have accepted Piyutim in Chazaras Hashatz, but most shuls today, I imagine, are not saying Piyutim in the bracha of Kriyashma. Now, in Minhag HaGra, it's Maaseh Rav, on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, I think he was also lenient, but there are times that say the Arba Parshios and some special Shabbat, so he would say it after Chazaras Hashatz was over, he would say the Piyutim. He wanted to show respect to the Piyutim, but he was concerned with the halachic aspects of it. So there's all kinds of issues to factor in. The Mechaber says not to say it because of Hefsik. The Ramah says from other Rishonim, the Rabbeinu Yonah and others, Ein Isser B'davar, and again, based on how you interpret the Mishnah in Brachos, and then he continues there, as you see in source number 20. I want to take the time that's left.
Is there a difference between Shachat and Matzah? A lot of shuls on Parshat Zachar,
yes,
won't say it in the Chazos Shas of Shachat,
yeah,
won't say it, well, in the Shemon Esrei of...
I can tell you the following. Some of these Shabbosos, they only had written Piyut from Musaf. I'm not sure if all four have everything, but all of them had Musaf. Some of them may have had for both. I'm not sure why there should be a difference necessarily. I have to think about it. Maybe something about put Musaf that, you know, more or less of a problem.
It's like a stereo even in the wrong practice.
Yeah, it's a good question. But look, I grew up saying Yotzros in Tiferes Yerushalayim. That's what they did. Not in the Baruch of Kriyashma, in the Chazaras Hashatz, of the Arba Parshas, for example, even on Yom Tovim, they used to say it. We typically Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, so we say Piyutim, but we don't say everything. We skip, right? And the art school tells us at this point it's sort of codified where to skip. It became its own, many congregations don't say this, became now its own Shulchan Aruch. But in any case, let's notice a couple of things about the Piyutim of Yavim Noroyim. In terms of the themes themselves, also the authors. Let's talk about Yav Rosh Hashanah is coming up. Slichus is coming up too. That's also connected to Piyut. Let's talk about the authors. Appeared first day of Rosh Hashanah, second day of Rosh Hashanah. As noted, Elazar Kalir only composed for first day of Rosh Hashanah, Shachris and Musaf. So he's all over the place. Shachris, Musaf, Yotzros, Chazaras Hashatz, Shachris, Musaf, Kios. A lot of them we don't say, some of them we do say. Second day of Rosh Hashanah is not HaKalir. Who's the second day of Rosh Hashanah Piyutim? So if you look at the acrostic, you can't miss it. The name that appears time and time again, Shmo Mefarim Madas Chavro, you'll see it. Shin Mem Ayin Vavnun, Shimo. Who is this Shimon? Shimon was before Rashi, contemporary of Rabbeinu Gershom. Shimon HaGadol, Rav Shimon HaGadol. Shimon HaGadol was one of the greatest Paitanim. This is a period a little before Rashi. And there's a legend told about him. He had two sons. One's name was Yitzchak, the other's name was Elchanan. In the second day, Yotzer, he has a remez to his son Elchanan in one of the words there, El Kelchanan. The legend goes, maybe you've heard the story of the quote-unquote Jewish Pope. Anyone's heard the story? Mm-hmm. So apparently there was a child who was kidnapped and taken to the church, rose up in the ranks, became the Pope.
Italy?
I don't remember where it was. But anyway, we don't know exactly how, whether it actually occurred in some form or another. I can't vouch for it. But it's clearly a legend that's very much embedded in that there was a person, a son, Elchanan, to Shimon HaGadol, is clear. Whether he is the one that actually the story happened, he was kidnapped and became the Pope, and then Shimon HaGadol, this we know historically, would intervene going to Italy. I know he was Magensa. He was in Magensa, Shimon Magensa. But he would travel to Italy on many occasions to avert gzeros that were made by, against the Jews. So one of those occasions, he ended up having an audience with the Pope, and they started playing chess. And he had taught his son certain moves in chess that only the son knew and only he knew, and it was impossible for anyone else to know it. This is the story. And they're playing chess with each other, and then they discovered each other's identity, and maybe he ran off and, became the Chubach face. Again, I don't know versions of the story. You have to look them up. I can't tell you exactly how authentic every detail is, but there's clearly such a story that's made its rounds for centuries. Shimon HaGadol, but for our purposes, he was an amazing stylist. He took his cue from Avraham HaKalir in many ways. And I want to show you something fascinating with the few minutes that we have left. One of the famous piyutim of Rosh Hashanah is Melech Elyon. Now, Melech Elyon is said on 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. The first day of Rosh Hashanah, it's said in Musaf. Who wrote that one? Avraham HaKalir. Second day of Rosh Hashanah, it's said in Shachris. Who wrote that one? Rav Shimon HaGadol. The styles are similar, but somewhat different. Take a look in your packets or in the sheet. We can go toward the end of the packet.
Acrostic,
yeah, they'll put their names at the end. So you'll see this right now. Not always did they do it. Rav HaKalir sometimes does it. If you look at that's Shlomo Arkadyevich, Shlomo HaLevi. Yes, it was a common thing. Yeah, what does it represent exactly is a good question. It was certainly a common aspect of all kinds of cultures to do it. But I'd like to think that we got it first, so to speak. But Umaisa is also common to many composers. Take a look on the packet where you see here, this is from the Siddur, from the Mouth of the Forash. Now take a look. I want you to notice a couple of interesting things. This is the first day Musaf. Look at this page here. Can we go? Let's see if we can go ahead here to the screen. First day Musaf. Okay. Take a look at your screen or at your sheets. This is what you'll be saying in Shul in Mitzvah Shem, not too distant future. Now, the first thing is, Melech Elyon is supposed to be the beginning of the line. You can see that, right? What do? It's supposed to end L'adei Ad Yimloch. What do? We run into the next line. That's anyway unusual, but we do it by other things as well. But it's even more striking over here for the reasons that we'll soon see. Notice the acrostic. It's Alabes. Or is it not Aleph Beis? What's going on here? The first stanza, Kelda Bamorom, Ade Bamorom, Omet Yadel Torom. What's the letter that keeps recurring? The Aleph. Now, what do you expect for the next stanza to be? Beis. What's the next stanza?
Gimel.
Gibel, Hakim, Gosom, Mekim, Golem, Mukim. What happened to the Beis? Go to the next stanza. Melech Elyon. What does he have here? Hey. So what's going on? It's alternating letters. The next one's Ochet Surim. So it's three stitches in each stanza, that's his composition, but it's alternating letters. Zayin, Tes, Kaf, Mem, Samach, Pei, Kuf, Shin. Now, where's the Beis, where's the Dalet, where's the Vav? Now, what happens now? You have, after the Shin, you have tucked away here, are two stanzas. Instead of being Melech Elyon, what are they? Melech Evyon. Now, those two stanzas are based on what letters?
Beis
and Tuf. What's happening? Who can be a detective here and figure this out? What has happened here? What has happened? So suddenly two stanzas, Beis and Tuf, and then it finishes with Avo, look at the bottom of the page, Avo Melech Elyon Tuf Fola'ad, which is a Tuf.
Looks like but, somebody changed it.
So well, what's going on here? So these two stanzas, Balabar at Shachas, notice the meter, clearly it fits with the same meter as everything here, three stitches, Bovar Shachas, Bishova Shachas, Bleris, Blinachas, Admasa Yimloch. That's a base. The Tuf, Tnuma Tufeda. Now notice the contrast. What does the Shin say? Shena in Lefanov. He doesn't sleep. Right? What does the Tuf say? Tnuma Tufeda, Tadema Tufeda. He's full, he's sleeping all the time. Who's sleeping all the time? The Melech Evyon. Who never sleeps? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Notice, these two stanzas were part of the original. There was a Beis. We have it here at the end. There was a Tuf. And you know what? There was a Dalet, and there was a Vav, and there was a Ches. These were meant to be alternating. Melech Elyon followed by a Melech Evyon. You want to see the original, you can do it. We have from the Cairo Geniza, we have evidence of the original. But before I show you that, I want you to go to the second day, Rosh Hashanah Shachris. Now, whose Melech Elyon is this? Rav Shimon HaGadol. Now, it's a different number of words per stanza. Before we saw it, it was shorter, right? There were three parts to each stanza. Here, it's a little longer. Amit Tamenusa, Chorosh Nisnasei, whoever is about to has to find a niggin, you have to know that here it's a little longer, so you have to stretch out the niggin a little bit more. Omer va'osem, Moza, Machsa, this is Aleph. Notice what's missing? The Beis. Again, you go to Gimel and the Hay and skips on and on. But what happens at the end? We take Beis and Taf. But the Beis and the Taf are coming from whose composition? The Melch Elyon. It's not fitting with the rhythm of this one. Note, Balavarat Shachas, Beshova Shachas, Bleis Boginachas. How many parts to that? Three. But the stanzas here are much longer. They took the Beis and the Taf of Avrozah Kalir's Melch Elyon, and they tucked it away before the Avo. They added the Avo, and notice the Shimon over here. You can see the Shimon, right? At the end, Shofir HaEmes is a Shin, Mabad of Emes. You see Shimon, the name Shimon. You want to see the original for both. Shimon HaGadol had his own Melch Elyon that conformed with his style of his composition, which we ignored, and we just took the two, Beis and the Taf, and we tucked it away at the end of his composition as well. Turn the page and you see one after the other. Okay, this is found in a number of Machzorim. I took it from one of the Masa Meforash at the end of the Masa. They printed it out. Okay, notice this is from the first day's Musaf. Kel dar b'marom ade b'marom mochil d'tor ade ad yimloch. End of the stanza. Then Balavarat Shachas, that's the base. Then you have the Gimel Gibel Hakim followed by Dova Kadever, Dover Va'over, Domele Iver, Admasa Yimloch. And that was the Dalit. And now you have the Hey that we say, and the Vav that we don't say, and the Zion that we say, and notice the Ches. Obviously, you were not meant to say Gadei Adimach Melech Elyon, because it wasn't going into Melech Elyon. It was going into Melech Elyon. Gadei Adimach, next stanza is Melech Elyon. Once the Melech Elyon dropped out, and the conjecture is, why did it drop out? Use your intuition. Why do you think they took out all these Melch Evyons historically? What was the danger? And the Wolf Heidenheim, famous for so much about Siddur, and I have a quote here. It was the government. It was Machlokas. It was polemical. So kind of, or the Jews self-censored, or somehow or other, you know, the Yidden felt that this is not comfortable to keep highlighting Melch Evyon. So it was meant to show the contrast. So we preserve that by taking Beis and Taf and putting it at the end. But notice, even though the second day's composition was a different composition, they just, to be Yotzer Tzayin, you could say they took the Beis and the Taf from Rav Elazar Kalir's first day's Melech Elyon from Musaf, and they put that instead of the ones from the second day's Melech Elyon.
Is that intentional, or could have been a printer mistake?
Anything is possible, but meanwhile, that is one thing I wanted to point out. The last thing I want to end, you have to bench, no? You have to bench? It's late. I'll just tell you what we have in a minute. The V'chol Ma'aminim is also strange, but the suggestion is as follows. Again, you notice how it should read. We say, V'chol Ma'aminim shehu kel emunah ha'bochin avod ginzin nistaros. Doesn't make sense. Ha'bochin avod ginzin nistaros should flow with shehu bochin kryos, because the ideas are complementing each other. And so it is basically the way we recite it, again, partly because of the Davar Shebekdusha possibility, we are basically messing up the kavana in a way of what's supposed to go with what. We're supposed to say, go mimabes, right, for the mishachas goes with go chazak, and not with hadan yachidi bay olam. Hadan yachidi bay olam goes with chomim shudayit emes. Rabbi Kevalevit sent me a copy of a machzer with a perish on the bottom, where he suggests the following, that what was meant to happen was there would be an acknowledgement, ha'oches biad midas mishpat, stated by the chazan, and then everyone would acknowledge it from a pasuk that affirms that point. V'chol ma'aminim shu kel emunah. Then the chazan would say, bochin avod ginzin nistaros, and the community, the kahal, would say, in fact, shu bochin koyos. And so that's how it would be. Alternatively, and I'll leave you with this at the very end of the packet, because it's sort of strange that you should start a sentence with a hey, the one that does it, and then end the sentence with the chol ma'aminim. You would imagine if you had to construct the sentence, you would start the sentence with, like, we, the chol ma'aminim shehu, the one who does. Except that, don't line it up the way we do when we recite it, but look at the last page, a hashara of somebody who sent this to me, and I think it's certainly intuitively very palatable. Notice how it might have meant to be sung is, the chol ma'aminim being the beginning of the sentence, shehu kel emunah. That's the beginning. This ha'oches b'yad midas mishpat, and then everything lays out beautifully. The chol ma'aminim being the beginning of the sentence, shehu bochin kroyos, he who does that habochin uvodik. If you don't want to go that far, you would at least flip it around and make the chol ma'aminim be the second part of the sentence, but still connect it not to what we do, which is connecting it to the next sentence, but to recognize it's really meant to go on before. But again, this is what has happened in this packet that he sent me. He says, this is a ha'aro l'chazonim shemeshabshim kavanas ha'paitan b'meshem arvenes ha'seder lo l'fi ala beis kafel. Okay, we should recognize, you know, again, Yosi Masha Karasi Lufnechem, Kasuv Khan, as we would say, it's a lot more that we could talk about. The main thing is to have appreciation of what we say and to connect, of course, with the larger themes of Rosh Hashanah and the many, many ideas, of course, and the more that we feel inspired by what we're saying, the more Kadosh Baruch Hu should hear our tefillahs and give us all a geben shtiyar, a gzim lach simat hayom.
It's in the Maser, but they don't.
Who wrote it? According to this Maser, it's Yannai that wrote it. He says it was Yannai. This is the Maser by Goldschmidt. He says it was composed by Yannai. I never stood anywhere else, but that's what he thinks. It's old, but the Salvation said that if he didn't say it, he would do it. That's what he thinks. Thank you.